Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 5th, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long, and this is all you're going to hear from us this week.
That's right. We're actually turning the reins over of the show to the super fans. We hope you enjoy it. They got together and recorded a show last week for us. So without further ado, here is the Ante Up PokerCast Superfans Show.
Welcome, everyone, to the first, perhaps only, Ante Up Superfan Roundtable. Tonight, the fans are taking control of Ante Up Podcast, and over the next approximately hour, talk about topics relating to our favorite pastimes, poker, and the Ante Up podcast. I'd like to go around the room and introduce our panel. When I do call on you, please give a little background on yourself, how long you've been playing poker, and maybe one or two favorite moments over the past couple of years. Let's start over there with Brian.
Hi, y'all. Ante Up. This is Brian out of New Jersey. I've been playing poker for 6 years online and live. I've casually made an exit out of my working stiff job to play poker professionally. It's what I do. It's what I love. I love the poker industry. I love the poker entertainment aspect of the world. I'm very hip on, you know, what's what, who's who, and I love the game. I play the poker for income, and when online was big, I played online. If online comes back, I'm going to be playing online again. I have a kid on the way in the next week and a half, so the amount of time I'm going to be in the casino is going to be severely cut. So I love the game, and I would love it to be online too. As far as interviews and things I'd like to see for the show, I would like to know, how are they doing, where are they now kind of thing for maybe the 2 months, 2 million gang, and maybe hear a little bit from them. I know a lot of what they're doing. There's some big things with some poker documentary. I know Jay Rosenkrantz is working on that. You know, I'd like to hear a little bit more with that, what's going on with that.
All right, thanks, Brian. And to our next superfan, David.
My name is David Bloomberg, and being on the Superfan Show continues my quest to take over all of Ante Up, as Chris and Scott have noted. I have been playing for 6 years, almost all live. I did play on the dreaded Full Tilt at the time. As a matter of fact, I won a tournament the morning of Black Friday. Obviously not money I have seen. I play nowadays mostly, well, let's call them unofficial games because there are no casinos terribly nearby. Their closest is about an hour and a half away. I suddenly ran out of words. I don't know. Chris, hit that out.
All right, Dave, we'll let you off the hook there. Okay. Dan, how about you?
Hey, I'm Dan England. I'm actually a reporter for the Greeley Tribune, which Greeley is about an hour north of Denver, and our paper's about 30,000 in circulation. I'm actually the entertainment editor and also the outdoors reporter for the Tribune. I'm also a freelance writer. I've got 5 year, it all blurs together. I've got 5 year old twins and a 7 year old boy and a crazy dog who I think you heard in the background in the beginning. And I don't know if you guys remember Poker Room, But I got hooked on that because I started playing in a home game with friends, and this guy came up and said, "Hey, you know, poker's on the computer now. Did you know that?" I said, "No." I played for play money for years, maybe a couple years, and then moved on to real money and fell in love with it. This was probably back in 2006, maybe. And I remember still remember the first time I played in a casino in Colorado when it was just $5 limit was all they offered. It was like $2 to $5 limit poker. And I was really nervous, but I had a great time. And so mostly it's about an hour and a half away, which is what I think David said too. Basically drive up there when I can, but it's not as often as I would like. So that's about it. I also make it out to Vegas once a year and play about 12 hours a day when I do, because I just love it so much.
Thanks, Dan. We can call this next guest either John or we can call him Poker Geek.
Yeah, I'm John Somsky, also mainly known by the Annie Up Nation as Poker Geek. And I started playing poker probably in high school, you know, back in the 80s. And I've been playing when I started my job as a computer programmer, got hooked with a bunch of guys and started playing on a fairly regular basis, generally five-card draw and things like that. But then when the Hold'em craze took over, I jumped on board with that, played online, I play in the casinos. And then recently my next achievement in poker is becoming the Annie Up Ambassador for Minnesota. And that's pretty much all there is to know about me.
Well, thank you very much there, Poker Geek. And finally, last but not least, Rich, and your introduction.
Hi, this is Rich Santoro. You might know me by my Annie Up screen name as Rich Santoro. I came into poker in 2003. Interestingly enough, it wasn't really from the TV boom directly. I was in Vegas at the time, didn't follow poker, I played a few times as a kid. It wasn't something I did very much, but I used to produce prize fighting events like the Ultimate Fighting Championship, but some of the smaller version shows. And we were doing a show at the Orleans Casino, and we just got done with the event. It's a very stressful enterprise. All this buzz was going on at the big poker tournament, and so I, you know, looked into it just to kind of see, and blew my mind. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And you know, I didn't play at all, but I really kind of got captivated. And when I got home, and Poker Room was another place that I found. I heard someone else mention it, and I found it online, started dabbling with it a little bit, ran into some guys who played at work, and said I'd like to give it a go. Didn't do so well, but I got all the books, started reading everything. This kind of really took to it. And for me, it was like therapy, because I did the prize fighting events, producing shows and promoting events. You got to rely on a lot of people to make things happen. You got to coordinate and influence people. And it's just very stressful. Whereas poker, it's just you. It's you and your decisions. You don't have to confide in anyone. You don't have to count on anyone to be in the right place at the right time. So I just really found it as a great outlet. And I eventually moved away from the production side with the prize fighting and just really took on poker as a hobby then. And that was my outlet. That was my creative flow. That was something I really enjoyed to do. Of course, it replaced, you know, there was the fantasy of being a big time promoter, which never occurred. So now I've got this new fantasy of being a, you know, a big time poker player someday. Of course, that's tempered by the fact I've got a wife and some kids and a home. And so I can't go nuts and throw everything into poker. But I play mostly home games, a little bit of small stakes in the casinos. I'm in the Chicagolands, there's plenty of casinos. Predominantly a winning player, but I made the mistake of not making an agreement with my wife early on. So about 100% of my winnings go back to the house after I get home.
Yeah.
So my bankroll management is just sort of not really there. So I haven't been able to grow the bankroll to step it up and take on more adventurous stakes. But anyways, that's my relationship with the game, and I love it.
Thanks, Rich. And I just realized, to the Antiope Nation, that I never introduced myself, your host, Andrew. And a little introduction of myself. I began playing poker pretty consistently about three and a half years ago when I moved to Tampa, St. Pete. Fell in love with the game right away. I mean, I played a little bit, when I was living in New Jersey, but nothing serious. Fell in love with the game really fast and played as a hobby slash, I guess, part-time job every now and then, if you can take a couple of dollars away from the casino. Actually have helped Scott and Chris out on some projects while getting my MBA at the University of South Florida. They were kind enough to open the books up for me and my group doing our capstone MBA project, where we got to write a marketing slash financial plan for Andy Up. And that was a year of just pure and utter fun, especially working close with Scott and Chris. So with the introductions done, a roundtable wouldn't be a roundtable without some questions. So to this group of super fans, I open the floor and I think
I'm not comfortable with the term super fan, but go on.
Okay. Well, we might have a problem here, but
all right, put him off the call.
But probably to one of the more famous Anti-Up Nation, I guess, super fans, Poker Geek, I'm going to open up the first question to him. Let's go with this. What attracted you to actually spending the last 7 years or so listening to this, or whenever you jumped into the Anti-Up Nation? 7 years gone by, this show has gone on. What has attracted you to stay a fan, a loyal fan, for that amount of time?
Well, for me, it started, I was big into podcasts, so I was learning how to get new podcasts. I was trying to get each and every one, and during the first few episodes, I kept on thinking to myself, these guys are horrible. I know so much more about poker than they do, and they were getting things wrong all the time. I mean, this was, keep in mind, this was like back in the first 10 episodes, so, you know, they've grown a lot, and I think they do a much better job than I could do at this point.
Yeah, that's pretty frustrating right now, actually.
Yeah, well, that's it. So I got it, enjoyed into that, and it's kind of become a community for me, particularly back when Apes 4 was going on and I was making a run for Player of the Year for that tournament series. It kind of really drew me in. I was always active on the forums, even back when, before it was Annie Up Magazines, where there was, you know, forums hosted elsewhere relating to the Annie Up podcast, and I just found it was a good community. It's a smaller knit community than 2+2 is, so and people are actually cordial here, and generally they're fairly nice, which is kind of, I'm from Minnesota, and that's kind of how we do things here. So that's why I've stuck around. I've gotten more and more involved. I started taking over the Apes Points series, because mainly when I was going for the my second win, I was shooting for trying to win on season 5 of Apes, and I was disappointed that Gambit wasn't posting the results often enough, so I couldn't see how things were progressing. And, you know, Gambit's doing it out of his own spare time, out of his own free will, so I didn't feel like I could demand anything of him, so I asked him if I could help out. So I started that, and then I wrote the Ape Stats website to keep track of all of the Apes tournament series. So the tournament series is what got me started, and now I've gone into writing for the magazine. And so far, Scott and Chris haven't fired me yet.
Well done.
So, David, how about you?
Well, I'd say I got into it, I'm not really sure how long ago, basically when I got into podcasts, and I saw it, and as far as I recall, it was pretty random, and I found them, and I enjoyed it, and I can hear someone breathing really loud.
You're excited about this question.
One thing that I really like about the podcast is that it is made for the more average player, the player who plays it mostly on in a free time situation. It's not one of these, like some of these strategy podcasts where they go 18 levels deep. And there's no way you can think about that when you're sitting at a table at a 1-3 table, you know, or at a $300 buy-in tournament. And so I just got more and more into it. I started, communicating with Chris and Scott, obviously sent them a number of things. So it's just, I know some people who have complained to me and said, man, I picked up this podcast and it said Omaha Strategy and it wasn't what I wanted. Well, that's because they're playing Omaha for literally thousands of dollars and they're looking at this podcast and not understanding what the point of the podcast is. It's not going to be that super high level, and most of us who listen to it don't want it to be that super high level.
Right.
I think you bring up an excellent point, and having somebody here, Brian, you who play for a living, what would be your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, as far as the podcast goes, in the past 7 years, I've really got into podcasts, listening to the 2+2 Poker Cast, and luckily enough, I really got into podcasts about 2-3 years ago, and that's when I started to, like, just, you know, go after every podcast and listen to Stitcher at the poker tables and just, you know, hitting everything. I have a lot of favorite podcasts out there. I'm a big podcast junkie now, and I don't listen to music. So that's really how I got into them over the past 7 years. As far as playing, the games are live. I mean, they're just fantastic. I love playing live. I love coming into the casino, and I know more than half the people at the tables that I play with because I play so much, and I know people by name, and it's kind of sick. But, you know, I walk into the games, and I mean, I know where the good games are because, you know, I'm spotting people right and left. Oh, this is a terrible table. I know everyone there, and they're old guys, and they're tight, so stay away from them. And, like, I'll see some new guys in the room, and I'll be like, oh, all right, let's go. But, you know, I'm really good at, you know, looking for good spots in games, and I don't necessarily have to play the biggest limits in the room. My main drag in AC is like Harrah's and Borgata. And at Harrah's, you're lucky if you're getting a 2-5 game there. I mean, I can successfully, you know, make a living playing 1-2 if I really wanted. But, you know, I hear all these people on the forums who really play poker. They just think it's a huge drag to be playing 1-2. But I honestly think the money is really can be made there. I mean, you don't really have to go risk it in the 2-5 and the 5-10 to be making a good living at poker. Does anyone agree with me on the line? Does anyone play the bigger games and they really feel that way?
Yeah, this is Rich. I mean, I do play the 1-2, and I agree. You can make money there because in my sense that the people are willing to drop a buy-in or two buy-ins. They're just little, you know, it's 1-2, they'll call a lot of hands, they'll play loose, and you know, I'd rather do that. I mean, I'm not a pro player, so I don't get a chance to really build my bankroll. Like I said, I give it to my wife. But you know, when I do go play, I'd rather play the 1-2, not risk much, and know that I can have a shot at some pretty good money from the kind of players there.
Anybody else want to jump in on this? Because I think it's possibly an interesting thought. I mean, we're all poker players here, so we all play for whatever reasons we play.
For me, I just try to actually make profit playing, but I don't actually have to live off of my bankroll. I mean, I make my money as a computer programmer, and I would have to do become a much better poker player than I am now to replace that income playing poker. My goal is just to be a profitable player. And, you know, so I don't have a real good judge of what level I would have to play at in order to make what I would consider an adequate living.
Hi, this is David. I agree with Poker Geek. I've recently had to think about this, especially because I play for fun. I play for the competition. I play to hopefully make a little bit of money. And recently, for various reasons, a number of the local games are no longer fun. Some of them are for personalities. Some real jerks have come to the game, the type who like to just comment on everything, berate everybody. And I told one of the floor people, I said, look, I do this for fun. So, you know, either you control this person or you're not going to see me here anymore. And so I'm in a similar situation in that, you know, I have a family, I have a good job. I'm not going to quit and start playing poker for a living, but I do it for the enjoyment.
Have you ever thought that maybe that person is trying to just annoy you to get you to play differently?
It definitely is possible, although it's interesting because this particular person can be a nice guy, and then sometimes he just turns into a jerk. And other people have commented on it. I'm certainly not the only one who has noticed it. And maybe it is that he's trying to do it to get me to play differently. I will say that
I will definitely say there are people out there who live for getting under people's skin at the poker table. That's what they're about 100%. They're out there to get you tilted, to get you to play differently, to get you to play angry, to get you to try and felt them with some terrible hand where they're going to just crush you. I mean, if they're getting under your, if someone gets under your skin and makes you play badly, then they feel they have an advantage.
Yeah, I think in this guy's case, it's just that he feels he's better than everyone else in the room. Could be wrong, but either way, I think we've my answer may have drifted a bit away from the question, which was a tangent on the original question. But I guess it goes back to, you know, like you were saying, Brian, of you know, how much money you can or can make. And I think it just depends on your situation. Some games are going to be more difficult than others. There are some casinos that I've gone to where I feel like I'm sitting in someone else's home game. They all know each other. And nobody's doing anything that's going to make anybody money except for the casino.
So, well, then you see that. You personally see that as a bad game. And if you can avoid a game where, I mean, locally, if this is the only option, then you have to work around that to find a way to make that game profitable.
Right.
And I think it speaks to, you know, what is your goal in poker? You know, I understood Brian's making a living. Other people are looking for entertainment. You know, yeah, if the guy's, he's trying to make his profit by getting under your skin, but if that defies what your purpose is, you know, your pleasure equity or however you want to look at it, if it's being diminished by their attitude, you know, you just got to make your choice. Table selection because it's a soft game or table selection because it's a fun game. You just got to, you know, be honest with yourself about what you're trying to achieve and go with that.
And you did the absolute right thing by, you know, standing up and saying, look, I'm not going to play with this guy. If you do that every time, you're winning because you're going to play on your terms. You're going to play when you want to, and you're going to enjoy yourself.
I can't imagine playing poker for a living. I play it maybe, you know, probably 5 or 6 times a year, especially now that online is dried up. And, you know, the home game I have is a 5-10 cent home game, and that makes it really fun. But so I really admire guys who can withstand, you know, the beats and the variance of the game. For me, poker is just a really fun
activity, and it's kind of another interest I have, like running marathons and, you know, climbing mountains and riding out here. So I admire people like that. I really do. I don't think I could stand poker. I think if I had to play it 10 hours a day, I think I would hate the game. But because it's a nice treat for me, I think I really enjoy it.
Well, I think that speaks to whether or not, you know, somebody has the almost the moxie to say, I'm going to be that person that's going to take that that opportunity to almost be an entrepreneur and say, this is my job 5 days a week, 6 days a week, 8-10 hours a day, and say, I'm going to build my career doing this in which I love. Or say, you know what, I love it too much to get bogged down in making this a grind. And people,
and I like that point, though. I love it too much to play it full time.
Well, they say love what you do, and you'll never right. you never feel like you're going to work. But if you know, if you feel like you're working, then you're not going to love what you do. So, right. I guess moving on to a bit of a, you know, kind of a different spin on a topic, you know, what is it that, I guess, what drives you to actually, you know, other than, you know, money, is there other things that drive you to this game? Is there other, you know, have you gotten more from this game than just going out there and trying to make a couple of dollars? Like, is there a social aspect to it? Is it, you know, a need to, you know, be in action? You know, is there other driving motivators that have brought you to the game of poker?
Hey, this is Rich. I'll go ahead and, you know, the besides the obvious opportunity to make some money, it really is, I mentioned it was a kind of therapy for me. It was a way to kind of vent and relax and do something interesting. But, you know, my line of work today, I'm a quality engineer, and risk management's a big part of what we do. And that's what poker is. Every decision, every hand, you know, every moment, you're exercising those muscles. And I guess for me, it's the way I'm wired. I really get interested and exciting about going through that process. And, you know, I do the wrong thing by, in my home game, I'm telling all my buddies about, you know, what I was thinking about and why this is a good play, or, you know, why they made a bad play. And, but, you know, I don't mind making them better if it helps me get better, because the competition's a little tougher. You know, and so that brings me to the other part that I enjoy, is the interaction. It's a very social game. I got a great home game with some buddies, and, you know, we have a great time. We laugh. You know, we could easily spend $50-$100 going out to have some drinks and something to eat. So it's no small thing to sit down and potentially lose some money, because it's the same risk, but you're having fun. And, you know, just to kind of take it back to the original question, which is why I love the Up so much, because it has that feel of a home game and a podcast. You know, the banter, the personalities that Chris and Scott had, it's very interactive. You know, you got the mailbag, you got hand of the week, you got a hotline, call the floor, you know, there's the forum where topics are brought up. And so you can, like, you feel like you're engaged. And then you do something like this with super fans where you can participate. And I've had a couple hands of the week read online, and that's just kind of makes you feel like you're at that home game again, interacting with people that in a hobby that you really enjoy, with company you really enjoy. So that's been really great.
Yeah, this is Poker Geek here. For me, I'm a very competitive person. I like competition. I'm also 5'7" and weigh over 300 pounds. So you're not going to see me out in the ball field or, you know, playing any types of sports competitively. But at the poker table, you know, I can take anyone on head to head, and you really can play with anyone in this sport or this game. I won't get into the sport versus game thing, but anyone at any level, right? A whole different topic of conversation. But in any other endeavor, it's really hard for people of varied skill levels and varied backgrounds to get together and actually enjoy the same thing. So for me, the competition part of it is what really keeps me going.
Poker Geek, this is Dan, and it's an interesting point what you said about anybody can play this game. I actually love running, and one of the reasons I love running is because a lot of people can do that sport that you see Olympians do too. Like, I'm not going to do gymnastics, anytime soon. Poker was sort of the same way for me. It was sort of like I could sit at a game that a lot of these really great players can do and play the same game. But I'll be honest, I started listening to the podcast because of Columbo. He was a fellow poker blogger, and I liked the way that he thought about the hands. And I needed something to distract me on these 2 and 3 hour runs that you're supposed to do when you're training for a marathon or climbing a mountain. And the podcast and thinking about poker hands was a perfect way to do that. How will I play a hand in this situation? Okay, well, I'm not thinking about how much my calf hurts at this point then. And so I think that's what attracts me to the game, is it sort of gives my mind something to ponder other than, you know, work, kids, or whatever else is going on in my life.
This is David again. And I agree with the, I think I said it before, the competition aspect. And it does. It gives you problems to think about, things to think over. And you can win victories, you know, whether through skill or through luck. I mean, I was playing in a Heartland event this past weekend, and I was at a table, and I was just getting beaten up by these two young kids who ran the circuit. Then I sucked out on one of them, and that felt good. And then I outplayed the other one right after it. That felt even better. You know, it's definitely got highs and lows, but I enjoyed it. I played for 3 straight days, basically, and I'm going back this weekend for the main event. That competitive aspect.
Hey, this is Rich. I was going to add on to that thought, you know, that the competitive aspect, feeling like you can get a victory and, you know, feel good about it. You know, I don't know how it might be for, you know, like a pro like Brian or somebody else out there, but, you know, I don't play a lot of live tournaments, a little live cash, some home games, things like that, but I remember I joined a charity event, and it was a pretty small event. Basically, it was a two-table sit-and-go, but I won that event, and it was just kind of my first live tournament winning, and, you know, I knew everybody was there. It was my kids' hockey organization, so it was just kind of like a big proud moment, like, hey, look what I got, you know, and I started wearing the Annie Up bracelet I got as swag, as my victory bracelet, claiming it as my, for the tournament. So, you know, it's just kind of a good experience to have that, you know, that, hey, I got a win. I did something there. It was kind of good.
That's very true. And good luck, David, to you playing in the main event at the Heartland this weekend.
Thank you.
Absolutely, Dave. Good luck.
Thank you.
You know, Brian brought up in his introduction, you know, something that he'd like to see Ante Up, you know, kind of maybe do in the future. So I'm going to throw the rest to you. And Brian, if you want to elaborate on what you had said earlier, you know, just kind of like, hey, you know, we're the fans of the, you know, we're part of the fans of the show. You know, these are some things that we would like to see Scott and Chris one of these days, maybe sometime in the near future, you know, when they stop going on so many road trips. Hey, this is what we'd like to see you guys maybe produce an interview with, somebody they haven't done an interview with, a segment that they, you know, that maybe a game they haven't talked about, or, you know.
Well, they covered that All In movie that came out, and, you know, that was definitely a real good documentary on where the poker industry has come from and what's happening with the Chris Moneymaker boom. You know, there's certainly going to be another documentary on the horizon. That being, I think it's going to be called Boom. I'm not sure though. Is that right? Does anyone know?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's done, by the Deuces Crack people.
Yeah, certainly.
2 months, 2 million people.
Absolutely. Jay Rosenkrantz, White Lime, Donnie. I can't remember the other guy. That's terrible, but oh well. Yeah, that crew and Deuces Cracked are putting together a nice documentary. I'd love to hear some interviews and the direction that they're going for that. And I'm pretty sure the media coverage is going to start up with that movie, because I'm thinking it's coming out relatively soon.
Anybody else want to jump in? David, Dan, either you have any thoughts on this?
Well, this is David. The only one that I would love someone to answer this question, and no one can seem to answer it, or no one seems to want to answer it, and it's a legal question of why there are still online poker sites, Merge, Block, those guys, with American-facing sites, and they claim, or at least people who represent them claim, that they are operating legally. And yet no one can seem to give a solid answer as to why. And since I know Chris and Scott obviously aren't lawyers, but, you know, they talk about tax law. So
this is way outside the tax law bracket. I mean, if you hear any pro on in any media outlet that they use, when they say that they play online, they will always say play at your own risk. There's nobody out there really mainstream promoting an online poker site right now. There's no faith. I mean, I do not have a dime on any online site right now, and believe me, I want to play online. I miss it. I really do miss not having to drive 2 hours to play. It's just, you know, the state of things right now.
It would be interesting, though, to the point, to have Chris and Scott get somebody, you know, a lawyer that has worked with those, just has an opinion, to give some thoughts and state the case on behalf of those sites, you know, devil's advocate, whatever, why they think that they're legit or they're okay to operate. I mean, that would be a good discussion. I'd like to hear that myself.
Right, and what really sparked this for me was I heard another interviewer talking to someone, a pro who's representing one of these sites. I think it's a lock site. And the interviewer asked, and the pro said, oh, yeah, it's legal. And the interviewer said, well, why is it legal? And the pro said, well, because, you know, they do things differently. And she just sprouted a few more words. And the interviewer said, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And I was screaming at my, you know, car radio, no, it doesn't make sense. Ask a question, be a journalist, you know, and it didn't happen.
Well, once you have a poker pro that's taking a dollar from a poker site, you have to weigh the fact that that person is on their payroll. That's that. I mean, well, like, you're not going to get a devil's advocate from a person who's promoting a site.
Well, it's the point that the journalist didn't do any good follow-up on that. It's the point.
Right, and if you're going to claim it's legal, I'm promoting this site, it's legal to play, your money is safe, then I want to hear why.
Hey, this is Dan. I think it would be interesting for them to explore, too, just when are we going to see online poker again? How long is that going to take? I know they've sort of touched on that, but I would really like to hear, you know, what can we expect in the next year or two?
I think that's probably a question for the PPA, right? I mean, that's where I would go with that.
I don't know.
I know that, I would put money down that there will be
great. I mean, you know, see if they got some context.
I would agree, because I mean, South Point did get its license apparently through the state of Nevada, and if they've got a license in which to offer online poker, then there has to be some sort of timetable in which they're going to be able to offer it.
Well, I think I've heard.
Know, Chris and Scott were actually good journalists because they work for a newspaper, and I think they could actually answer that question pretty well, probably better than a lot of people have.
Well, unfortunately, I think a lot of it is pure prognostication. I mean, you have the Republicans putting it in their platform to be against online gaming of all types. So I think a good part of it depends on the outcome of the election.
Right, and that's probably true.
I think that makes a whole bunch of sense.
Yeah, there's probably no real hard roadmap for anybody right now. So to your point, it would be speculation that I know I'd be interested in. And they tap dance around this subject a lot. They try to be PC, but let's go right out and just do a top 5 hottest female poker players. That would be a great start. But, you know, I think there'd be some variance in the opinions. We know that one likes Gretchen Mol, one's likes Famke. You know, so we'll get some debate there.
You probably need to do the top hottest, 5 hottest male poker players as well, just to, you know, you want to keep the Antiup Nation.
I believe they're on everyone. This podcast right now.
Absolutely.
I think we have unanimous agreement on that.
I nominate Poker
This is
Geek.
True. There are Well, no, I was just saying there are five others besides me, so that might be true.
Well, since we are looking at taking up a good portion of the podcast time this evening, does anybody out there like to maybe just give a little bit of a, you know, their closing remarks, or, you know, like a, just like kind of like a, you know, this is kind of my summation, you know, almost at the end of a debate, as we've been sitting here debating all night.
I want to thank Chris and Scott for all they do. I've really enjoyed the podcast. It feels like home. I thank them for allowing me to participate, you know, periodically through the interactive elements of the show, participate here in the Superfan program, and you know, just doing what they do and doing it well. I think they focus on a lot of integrity, and they deliver their products with both humor and integrity. And just keep up the great work, guys.
This is David. I'm going to agree with everything that Rich said, which makes makes it much shorter for me. But yeah, I think that, you know, they put out a quality product, two quality products, like the magazine and the podcast. And when they analyze something, you know they're going to analyze it with a rational mind. They're not going to just jump on things willy-nilly one way or the other.
This is Dan. I think somebody made the point earlier that they liked Annie Up because it does speak to the recreational player, and I'll never apologize for being a recreational player. I'm a winning player, but, you know, we're talking in the hundreds of dollars a year at the most, and I think that's the lifeblood of poker. I appreciate that there's a show out there that really speaks to us and has a couple hosts who really don't try to be anything more than that either. So,
and this is Poker Geek here again. For me, Annie Up is more than the podcast. It's more than the forum. It's more than the magazine. It's really become kind of an extended family for me. Getting together, being able to play online, playing papes, where people actually try to win when the prize is absolutely nothing. You know, playing poker for free. And generally, that does not work. But in papes, it's really not that bad. And being able to go onto the forums and tell people about your bad beat story or brag a little when you won something and having people be genuinely happy for you. For me, that's the number one takeaway is Annie Up is more than the sum of its part. It's really a community.
You're here.
This is Brian. I just wanted to say thank you to Annie Up. And this podcast has been a lot of fun. I appreciate the respect everyone's shown on the line. This has been a lot of fun as a fan podcast. You know what? I'm always going to Andy Up in the strategy guides and you know, the strategy topics I find wherever I can find them. And, you know, at the table, the magazines are there. And I really look forward to getting a hold of them. And I'm a big fan. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I guess I will take the final word in wishing everybody a wonderful night. This has been a real experience. And I have to thank the panelists for coming on here. I guess I can call you all panelists on a round table, Brian, Dave, Dan, Poker Geek, and Rich. But more importantly, I do have to thank Scott and Chris for allowing me the honor to do this, to represent their name, their brand, and you know, their baby as it is. They've given me that honor, and I appreciate it. You guys have made this fun and entertaining. I only hope that it is entertaining to, as it is to me, as it is to everybody else going to be out there when they listen to this. But thank you very much, everyone. And this is Andrew Malowitz saying good night and have a wonderful day.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
I don't know. Did you guys get my good side on the recording?
We did our best. We definitely did our best on that.
Yeah, I hope it turns out. I think for the most part, it came out pretty clear. I mean, it, you know, they drop out sometimes too, so I think everybody understands that it's sort of a tough
thing. Well,
I
certainly.
It can't be worse than the Sarah Grant one.
Oh, yeah, that was horrible.
Oh, yeah, that was horrible.
Oh, that was terrible.
I just wish they would have
couldn't listen to it.
If they would have just said, hey, we have problems, let's just get through it, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, all right, guys, I'm going to head out. Thanks a lot. Have a good night. I'll see you on the forum.
All right, sounds good.
Right.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Good
night, everyone.
Night.
Good night.
Night, everyone. Bye.